comes meet the sea in a clapboard shack by a broken down tree. There's a light in the window, two salty gals inside. I'm not sure if they're witches, but you know that's implied. Got the storytelling, ego swelling, pillow talking, moonlight walking, sea hags.
Welcome to the Sea Hags Podcast. I'm Chris Sheppa.
I'm Katie Norgren. With us this week is where the hell's that character coming from? It's the amazing Erin.
Hello.
Returning
back
for part two.
Yes.
Thank you. Hello.
Or 2.5, because mm-hmm. she was in our
two Christmas episodes for little vignettes
sure.
as well.
Yeah.
But this is for a real topic.
Whew.
For the real one.
So ready for
yeah.
this.
Welcome to episode 101. We did it. We broke off another hundo.
Nice.
And this is the last episode we'll ever do because you just said that. Just kidding.
It's okay. I'm just carrying on the tradition of stealing other podcast bits.
Yeah, that's what it's all about, was we just steal.
Yeah. Just steal.
Don't pirates.
Don't recreate the wheel. Just steal. Just grift. Just
grift it up.
Yeah. And we're just putting our own spin on it, I guess.
Mm. I guess.
Yeah, I don't even know. How was your week, Katie?
Shit.
Okay. How was your weekend?
Fine. Don't want to talk about it.
My week was good.
Oh, that's good.
So we went to hot yoga.
Oh,
my
yeah.
There's a
hot
yoga.
How hot is it?
It's not actually that hot, which is good. It's more, it's an infrared sauna yoga thing, and I went to four classes in a week.
Wow.
Which is a lot, but my body feels okay. So I'm going to keep going, I think.
I need that.
I did like a cheap trial, and it was just like so nice in the cold weatherness. Mm-hmm. Like, I actually feel warm.
In the cold, cold weatherness. In the before
cold,
times.
In the cold, cold dark. In the long, long ago.
Let's see. What did I do this week that's worth talking about? I read kids' books, which was fun. Did I mention that last time we recorded?
No.
No? I read a series of children's books from the 1980s that are some of my wife's favorite books ever, which is a series by Monica Hughes called the Isis Trilogy, which, you know, not such a great name these days.
but like the goddess Isis.
Yeah, it's about a planet called Isis, and it was a really, really lovely trilogy of really well-written kid sci-fi books
cool.
that made me feel a little bit closer to my wife as a little kid. Like,
aww.
Like just thinking about what a little baby trans would have thought about, like, this aww. Genetically modified teen girl who lives on a planet by herself with her robot guardian.
I mean, that's pretty
that's
good.
Adorable.
It was excellent. I really liked it. So, mm-hmm. Monica Hughes, The Keeper of the Isis Light, is the first book in the series, if y'all are interested.
Nice.
It was a getter, and everything else sucked, so that's the only thing mm-hmm. I'll mention.
Aww, highlights.
Yeah. I got into a fun conversation with my friends, because my friend from, like, since we were 12... is about to have a baby with his wife, which is really exciting, and I got, like, so doula on them, because I was just, like, trying...
Like full doula?
Trying not to, but then I was just like, oh, you know, I just hope that, like, because she was complaining that she was having some really bad lower back pain, and they, like, made it to the Chad Van Galen concert, and she managed to make it for, like, three songs and then had to leave.
Oh, no.
Because her back was hurting so bad, and I was like, oh, have you done, like, you know, here's some things that Derek could do, press the belly, do these things. I gave him a book to read, and I don't think he read it, and I'm like, come on, man, you gotta do it. And so then I just was like, advice, and then I was just like, wait, sorry, I'm doulaing myself, mm-hmm. I just need to, like, stop Oof. That.
Did it take you a while to clean that up after you doulaed yourself?
Exactly.
Get and all that placenta out of there.
Oh,
that placenta fell to the floor.
Yeah. were we even talking about that on the podcast?
Nope.
No, we were just singing live. Singing live, and the only rock song that features placenta it heavily. Or at all.
At all, probably.
Yeah. But, I don't know, it was just kind of funny, so then I was just like, I just hope that you have a really nice birth plan, and, like, whatever you want, you know, comes to fruition, and that's
oh,
all. And then she was
nice.
Just like, and she's like, I don't have a birth plan, I'm just gonna, and I was like,
what do you mean?
So then I'm like, must refrain. But, like, man, people, like, having a baby is so, like, public. I got a text from that friend's mom, about her daughter-in-law's cervix, you know? Like, it's just
oh,
such
gosh.
A weird, like, oh, you know, so-and-so's 2 centimeters dilated already. I'm just like, what a
and
weird...
I will not have a kid because I don't want people to know the state. Well, that's not true. I obviously want people to know the state of my cervix.
Yeah,
I tell jokes about it constantly, but that's on my terms.
Yeah, and you don't want to destroy that perfect cervix.
No, it's so perfect. It would be foolish.
But yeah, it was just kind of funny that I was just like, oh yeah, I know so much about your body. And then I had a bit of an existential crisis yesterday because
oh, cool.
I was about to be like, my best friend's having a baby, blah, blah, blah. And then I'm like, wait, Katie's my best friend now. Did Katie supersede Derek? I think she did, but then I'm like, I could also have two best friends.
You can have as many best friends as you want, but I will murder all of them to be the top.
It's just like,
as long as you know that.
He's got the longest running because he's from, like, age 12, so that's pretty good.
Awesome.
So.
He's got special 6 years on me.
Mm-hmm. And I was just like, oh my god, I wrote down, I'm just like, can I have multiple best friends? Is this high school? I don't know what's happening.
You can. Want.
Yeah, okay.
I will kill him, though.
Yeah, that's fine. He's moving back to the coast soon, so you'll be able to murder him in close proximity. I just can't wait to meet this little baby girl, and I, like, cried a little thinking about it.
Aww.
Like, I already love her so much.
Aww.
Yeah.
Babies.
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 How are your babies here?
My babies are big.
They're big. They're
not babies anymore.
Big babies.
That's right.
No, we talk about your kids too much on this show, it seems. I don't want to, you know, betray their own
individuality. No, but I think it's good to set it up because one day they will be guests on the show, so.
Nice.
I mean, assume you guys keep doing this for 10 years.
Yeah, we will. The younger one will be for sure.
Oh, for sure. He'll have a lot to talk about.
I mean, he could be a guest right now. That would be really fascinating.
We just won't use his name.
Yeah, podcasting with an 8-year.
Did I tell you that we were listening to some music. We share the Google Play app amongst the family. Mm-hmm. And so the nice thing about that is I can see all of their playlists. Uh-huh. So I can see what, you know, what their interests are and so forth. So he really wanted to listen to his playlist and I said, sure. And then the first song that came on was King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard. And I was so proud. And he knows all the words. I'm like, how do you even know this?
How did he find out about that?
He must have, like, seen it on my playlist and then said, oh, I'll check this out, and then now it's his
Because, I mean, that's a pretty cool name. That would be pretty attractive to, like, a young kid.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
what
yeah.
King Gizzard and the Lizard
it's
Wizard?
The coolest ever. And then we're talking, and he's like, oh, Mom, did you know that the moon landing was faked? So then I had this long conversation with him about why he thinks the moon landing was faked.
The moon landing was faked, guys, but it was faked by Stanley Kubrick, and he's such a completist that they actually shot it on the moon.
So it wasn't faked then.
No, it was faked. It was just faked on the moon.
On the moon.
There were no
okay.
astronauts. There was just
right.
a film crew.
I'll bring that to him and see what he has to say about that. It's just like the conversations we have sometimes. It's, yeah.
And you're also taking him to King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard as his first concert,
which
is very, very cool.
This is a band then? King
this
Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard?
Yes. Yeah. That's like one of Bob's favorite bands.
Oh,
too,
is that right?
Yeah.
Is it like an offshoot of Captain Beefheart or something?
No, it does. It's got that sort of 70s throwback psychedelic style to it. It's very interesting. I highly recommend it.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Try.
I just think, like, my joke yesterday was like, wow, his like bank security questions are going to be so interesting.
What was your first concert? How many characters can I fit?
My first concert was Garth Brooks.
I'm breaking into your Van City now.
Actually, my Van City doesn't ask that question. It should.
No,
it would be Huey Lewis in the news.
You get to choose all the time, like, what your different security questions are. I always go first concert because it was Oasis.
Oh,
perfect.
Now I'm breaking into your
bank
account.
Breaking into Chris's. Okay, we're all. And we've got all these Russian hackers listening here. Like,
yeah. Your password GallagherFan69420.
No, it's eyebrows420.
Eyebrows420. Roll them up and blaze them. Smoke eyebrows. Every day.
All right.
So you wanted to come
Should we
on
get
the,
into our topic? We had a topic. I love having
We actually have
plans.
A topic today. And yeah, Aaron came with plan, which is a question that I had based on the topic that we had about mm-hmm. planning versus improvisation.
Yes, I'm definitely a planner. I would love to be better at improvising and being more off the cuff, but I know it makes me very uncomfortable. I like having notes. I like knowing what I'm doing. I don't like faking it. So one of the things I wanted to talk about was I've been recently getting back into Myers-Briggs personality tests, and it came about in kind of a weird way. I was I work with an interesting group of people. Chris has heard many stories. And what's happened lately is a lot of my colleagues have decided to go and take MBA programs.
Oh.
Yeah, which is interesting.
They
just want
to be all up in the business.
Yeah, they want to get into the business. And for some reason, they teach Myers-Briggs in the MBA program, which kind of shocked me. I was like, really?
Are they
sure? But huh. Yeah, they use it as a way to, you know, in terms of, like, negotiation and team culture, they use it as a way to, like, you know, how do you categorize people? How do you deal with people with different personality types?
Right.
And, you know,
so that you can see, like, oh, in a team, we've got, these are all people. So instead of people self-identifying their strengths and weaknesses mm-hmm. and what they like to do or whatever, they just take the test and then we'll put you in all these categories and then we'll know that, like, well, you're a this and you're a that, yep. So you'll work together better and I'll keep these two people on this team.
Or, exactly. Uh-huh. So it is a way of controlling the people. But I thought it was interesting. So, I mean, I had done the test probably when I was in my 20s. And at the time I kind of went, really? That doesn't sound right. But now I did it again, got the exact same result. And I'm like, oh my God. And I don't know if it was a self-fulfilling prophecy and like I just kind of molded into that characteristic, but it was definitely like, oh man, again. So I did that and I went, okay, well maybe there is something to this. And then I was telling my partner about it and he's like, again with the astrology. And he's like, this is astrology for atheists. And I'm like, stop it. I like this stuff. Anyways.
I really like that.
And so I said to him, I'm like, okay, listen, you don't believe in this, but I'm going to read through all the, there's 16 different possibilities, different personality types. And I said, I'm going to read through all of the descriptions. I'm going to decide which one I think you are. And I'm going to write on a piece of paper and put it in an envelope. And then I'm going to get you to take the test. And if I'm right, if I nailed you down, then you're just going to have to eat humble pie. Because I'm right and you're wrong.
Fun
and,
times around the house.
Yeah, exactly. He loves it when I do this. So he said, fine, I'll play along.
What is the recipe for humble pie? Out of curiosity.
Oh, I'm not sure.
I need some.
Yeah. I think we all do.
I'm probably good, honestly.
Anyway, so I read through, I found the one that I'm like, this is him. This is absolutely him. And he took the test and he showed me. He's like, yeah, this is what I got. And I'm like, whoa. Yeah, I was totally right.
Oh, nice.
So then I was like, okay, maybe there is something to this. So I was interested if you guys have, now Katie I already talked to and she told me what hers was, which yep. I love because it's very close to mine mm-hmm. with just one variation. And then Chris, I don't know if you had a chance to take it or not.
Yes, so I told you what I thought that I had yesterday.
And I totally forgot.
That's totally fine. And then I did the test again just to make sure, and mm-hmm. I got a different thing.
Oh.
But just off by one thing.
Yeah.
And some of the questions I was like, I feel like right now in the mood that I'm in
yes.
and like the work that I've been doing, I've changed to like more of a planner than an improviser.
Mm.
And I've been getting way more into organization because of this all this bullet journal
oh,
bullshit.
Yeah, for sure.
And like right now, like, my work is super because it's the beginning of the year. We're in strategic planning mode.
Mm-hmm.
I think if I took the test in, like, July, I would probably get a different result again. So I'm kind of, like, cuspy. I'm on the cusp
and
between
totally
two different
fine.
Things.
And I think for all of these, because it is, like, you have, it's a spectrum, right?
Mm-hmm.
You could be right in the center and you could have almost equal parts of, you know, extroversion versus introversion,
mm-hmm.
or you could be really far on one side or really far on the other. So it sounds like whatever that particular letter was something where you're right in the middle.
Yeah,
and
the
NF, sway.
S, whatever.
Yeah.
NS.
Sensing versus intuition.
Yeah.
Why don't I read through, like, in case people at home want to play along
yeah,
and start
do.
Start thinking about, oh, where do I fit on this? I'll just run through the various. So if you've taken this before, you know you basically, you end up with a four-letter acronym. And the letters are, you know, there's sort of two sides of each coin. So the first one, which I think is probably the hardest for people to understand, is the extroversion versus introversion. Because I think in a lot of people just assume that if you're outgoing and you're chatty and you're very social that you're automatically an extrovert
mm-hmm.
and, you know, you're put into that category. I like the way that I was doing some research this morning on this and of course
nerd
it
alert.
Look out guys, here we go. I was doing some research and I like the way that this particular website was describing the dichotomies. So for extroversion versus introversion, the question you'd ask yourself is, do you prefer to focus on the outer world or your own inner world? So it doesn't mean that you're necessarily more of a people person or more outgoing or, you know, the first person to speak in a room. It's more like when you're looking at the world as a whole, are you focusing outwards or are you more introspective and looking inwards? Because I always end up on the E side, which bothers me because I feel like I'm an introvert. I was a shy kid. Sometimes it takes me a little bit of time to warm up in a group.
Mm-hmm.
But the truth is I really do focus on what's outside of me way more than being self-reflective and introspective.
Mm-hmm.
That's just my thing. So that's so listeners at home start thinking, like, do you feel that way?
Mm-hmm.
Or which way do you go. The next dichotomy is sensing versus intuition. So the question you'd ask yourself there is, do you prefer to focus on the basic information you take in, which is sensing, or do you prefer to interpret and add meaning? So for me, that's an obvious one because I'm always interpreting and analyzing and adding to everything that I see. Mm-hmm. I don't take things at face value. I do, like, I expect there to be many, many layers of complexity under everything.
Mm-hmm. And that's the one that, yeah, was flipping with me, which is mm-hmm. interesting because I feel like I'm way more on the, like, intuitive,
yeah.
putting meaning, like, all those layers. But I guess, like, for whatever reason, the answers that I was giving was a lot more like, because there was one that's like, oh, do you like to trust your imagination or your experience? And I'm just like, experience 100%. Like, I know that I've done this before and I know what I can expect.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, instead of, like, imagining what the possibilities could be kind of thing, and that's just, yeah, it feels like that's a change as I'm getting older where I'm getting more experience and more data that now I'm just like, it's a little more objective or like, or I'm expecting it to go in a certain way rather than like, oh, imagine like what other meanings could be in there, blah, blah, blah. But like, I love my intuition a lot. I just feel like I haven't been tapped into it a lot lately. And that's the same with like my creativity and all of those things just like have been kind of the tap for that has been turned off a little. It's kind of sad. Like trying to trust my instincts. I just haven't, they've not been right in a lot of ways lately. And it's, yeah, it bugs me because normally I feel like I'm super intuitive, but
Yeah, and I don't think it's something where you're stuck in one or the other through your life. It can change over time. I think it's just, you know, as your default response, and you, I think you hit something there where you said, you know, you usually trust your intuition.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it can be wrong, and it doesn't mean that your intuition is always right.
Yes.
That doesn't put you into that category. It's when you are faced with a situation, by default, are you going to go with what you see, or are you going to wait and analyze and go deeper before you're willing to make a judgment call?
Yeah. Totally. So that's like when you talk about the spectrum or you have like a part of this and part of that, like I was right in the middle almost of those things.
Perfect.
So
yeah, that makes sense to me. All right. The next one is thinking versus feeling. Touchy topic. When making decisions, do you prefer to first look at logic and consistency or first look at the people and special circumstances?
Mm-hmm.
So for me and Katie, we're pure Fs, I
me
think.
Too.
And you, I thought you might be as well.
Pure F.
You're such an F. Your F is F. And I think that, for me, again, like I'm fascinated by people.
Yes.
And I, you know, all, I think all of my interest
but they're
in
dreadful.
They can be, but I love meeting new people, learning about people, like really digging in to figure out who they are. Like that really interests me. And I think my interest in this definitely reflects that. My interest in astrology also.
Hey, this is a safe space.
Is it okay?
Yeah, we're very.
Thanks, guys.
What is
how many tarot cards
actually?
Are you Scorpio?
You're a Scorpio, of course. Yes,
mm-hmm. The horniest sign.
Mm-hmm. We're gonna talk about that later. Oh, so gross. Okay, anyways.
Sex is disgusting. Let's move on.
Oh, I have another topic. I was actually debating whether I'll talk about this, which I'm obsessed with right now, or my other topic, which is bird sex. So if we want to get into that a little later.
I mean, that combines two of Katie's favorite interests, which are birds and sex.
I don't like sex! I like birds, though.
I love sex. Birds, too. I'm really getting into it. Anyways, we can talk about this.
Birds like to
Well, hey, don't call it the birds and the bees for nothing.
That's right. Oh, it's so interesting. Anyways, so I think this one is fairly simple for people to identify. Like, are you a thinker or are you a feeler?
Mm-hmm.
And again, you don't have to be one, just purely one side or the other. You can be somewhere in between. But I like the idea that for people who are on the feeling side, they first look at people in special circumstances to see, you know, what's the situation?
Context.
Yeah, the context.
Nuance.
Yeah, all that stuff rather than just intellectualizing everything. And then the last one, this one I've always struggled with, judging versus perceiving. I feel like the word judging here is problematic because, you know, who wants to be called judgmental, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you certainly don't want to say, oh, yeah, I'm always judging the other people or whatever. But that's not really what they're trying to say. So the description here is, in dealing with the outside world, do you prefer to get things decided or do you prefer to stay open to new information and options? And for me, I'm definitely the first. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm very impatient. I want to make a decision and move on very quickly. Oh boy. So for me, it's like I'm not wishy-washy. I'm open to other ideas, but I am also by default, I will stick with my decision. Someone has to convince me otherwise. Mm-hmm. And if they do, if they've got a strong argument, I'm more than willing to admit that I was wrong and go with them, but I like to just get her done.
Yeah. So I think you and I are the same then, the ENFJ.
ENFJ. Yeah.
Are you both ENFJs?
Yeah.
And I'm an INFJ.
But then I was the ESFJ.
Okay, so
for
let's
some
too,
which
that.
And so I read both of them, and I'm like, I think they could be, but I relate more to the ENFJ, which the like ESFJ was a lot more like martyry,
right?
Which I'm not.
No, you're not. I wouldn't see that at all.
So. No, you're not.
So if you want to take a look at the different archetypes, go to 16personalities.com. I don't work for them.
this is not a sponsor. By 16. Just kidding.
16 is the number personalities, and then you can take the test there if you want to. But they also show you all the different archetypes, which I'm just pulling up right now so that we can see.
Yeah, so it's the protagonist is the one that...
Yeah.
And INFJ, I think, is like the helper, usually, or something like that. This is it's also my Enneagram, for those playing along at home.
Yeah, so what Enneagram and Myers-Briggs are the same, aren't they?
They're a little different, but they basically do the same.
Okay,
function.
So maybe I took the Enneagram and got the ENFJ, and then when I
no,
did the
it's different numbers. It's not you get a number instead of you don't get an acronym. It's so number two is my Enneagram, and it's just like the helping.
Oh, right. Yes. No. I've definitely done that too.
Right. We're doing that.
Yes. Okay. All these different. Yeah, I remember we did that at work too, and we tried to figure out who is what.
A lot of twos in harm reduction, I would assume.
Yeah, exactly. But, like, all these things are really interesting. Like, yeah, team building exercises. And so I've worked in lots of different workplaces. And my mom was she's into so many various kinds of categorization things.
Uh-huh. She loves anything that comes with a binder.
Yeah.
And some, like, some videos or something.
But, like, other people I've worked with are like that, too. So it's, like, I know, like, my color and my Enneagram number and my Myers-Briggs and my whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, so I could list, like, all my different, like, archetypes. I know, like, yeah, my tarot archetype and my astrology one as well as the, like...
And maybe that's an ENFJ thing that we're just totally into this stuff.
Because it
like
is about...
Like, to self-categorize.
Yeah, and it is really, like, about learning about people and,
yes.
like, how people interact with each other.
Yes.
Which
that's
is, like...
huge for me.
It is looking at the outside and looking at context and looking at communities where it's like, how are all these people, like, how do they all fit together and what are the social dynamics? But, like, the ESFJ apparently was focused way more on the, like, gossip, social scene kind of thing and, like, really status obsessed, and so that also didn't really sit super well with me.
So I'm just looking up that one. ESFJ?
Yeah, it was
the console. There we go. So let's write that down.
Which is, ESFJ. Yeah, weird.
So, yeah, if we compare that, we'll take a look at the console. They are, for lack of a better word, popular, which I think you are. But in high school, the ESFJs are the cheerleaders and quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's right.
Yeah. But I've changed a lot since high school as well.
Later in life, ESFJs continue to enjoy supporting their friends and loved ones, organizing social gatherings, and doing their best to make sure everyone is happy.
Yeah.
I think that's
so
a good fit for you.
That fits too. Yeah. So... I don't know. It was just, like, it was an interesting thing where it's, like, I can take some and some of the other a little bit. But, like, the protagonist one just kind of fits better. The, like, console archetype is, like, very much about, like, oh, I'm going to tend to your needs, And they're, like, oh, they totally always subsume their own needs for other people. I'm, like, fuck, I do not.
No, you don't.
I absolutely do not.
INFJ, I don't feel cuspy at all. I feel like it's extremely accurate.
Mm-hmm.
So insofar as, like, whenever I almost in the same way when I read Pisces stuff from Chani Nicholas.
You know which one?
I feel so seen.
Which one were you? So were you
in the top.
Analysts?
I am...
Diplomat, usually?
Oh, advocate.
Like that? Advocate, that's the one.
There we go. So we all, there's four categories. We've got our analysts, our diplomats, our sentinels, and our explorers. So all three of us have... fallen mostly in the diplomat category.
And what is Sentinel?
So Sentinels are...
The guys from X-Men, right? That they've had all the big robots that you have to punch and kick.
I don't think it's It's the same thing. Fire. I think, like, a sentinel is like a guard, like someone who's, like, protecting, is putting the needs of others in front of them. You know, you can think of a guard, someone who's guarding the king. The king is more important than they are, and they're self-sacrificing. So, yeah, I would say diplomat. For me, like, that category makes a lot of sense to me. Like, I've always, people have always commented on my diplomacy and that I'm always, you know, willing to listen. Definitely judging and being impatient about it, but still trying to see things from all angles. Yes, and we have the Sentinels, and then the Explorers are interesting groups. So these are your adventurous creators and social butterflies and things like that. So really interesting to see those different groups. So
So yeah, I'm wondering if like the Sentinel thing and like the change is just because I've been working in like way more of like a support role lately, kind of putting like in a career way, like putting other people's needs sort of above my own and stuff like that. So maybe that's just the shift.
Sure.
And again, it's like, yeah, ask me at a different time and I'll probably like shift to a different category.
Right.
Because everything's changing. Tell us a little bit about Katie's.
Yeah. So
please tell us about me.
So I find this interesting.
I could tell you were getting bored because we weren't talking about you.
Oh, it's typical advocate, right?
Tell
typical,
me, I'm, tell me I'm wrong.
Typical only child.
Oh, yeah, there's that, too. So the advocate, I like the little the clip on here. It says, quiet and mystical. Nope. Yet very...
Mystical, sure.
Mystical, not quiet. Yet very inspiring and tireless idealist. Would you consider yourself an idealist?
Ultimately, yes. I'm a cynical idealist. But I really do believe in goodness and, like, the moral imperative to be good. So in some respects I am, like, I don't think practically that the ideal things will necessarily come to pass, but that it is our duty as people in the world to make as much effort towards that as possible. So I would say that, yes, I am ultimately kind of an idealist.
Nice. So INFJs are not idle dreamers, but people capable of taking concrete steps to realize their goals and make a lasting positive impact.
That's the goal, right? Yeah.
Lasting positive impact, for sure.
It says, help me help you. And I definitely get that from you. Like, you are...
I'm an advisor, for fuck's sake, right?
Exactly.
Like,
yeah. Perfect.
It's rough sometimes. I just want to give all the students everything they want and need.
And they just walk right all over you.
No, they're super nice. I just, like, want to baby them all.
Aw.
My angels.
So sweet. Okay, perfect. So, yeah, I just thought that was really interesting. I hope people at home have... get a sense of what this is about and aren't being too cynical about it. They might be, and that's fine. You can judge me all you want. But definitely take the test and see where you fall, and then you can decide, you know, if it's all bullshit or if it's something you believe in.
Yeah, I like it. And it's neat that there's so many categories, so it really does give, like, a wide spectrum of, like, pretty much can encapsulate the whole breadth of the human experience.
Exactly.
If you can categorize people, but, like, I think you can, and I like them. But, like, with as with every category, like, the boundaries are flexible. And
for
it's just,
sure.
It's just a fun way to, like, I don't know. It's a good, yeah, tool of introspection. I'm really interested in the, like, the extrovert-introvert, like, that, you know, maybe you're more aware of, like, the things outside of you versus, like, introspective. Like, Katie, you're definitely one of the more introspective people that I know. I thought that I was self-reflective, and then as I think about it, I'm like, nah, not really, I guess.
I would like to be a lot less self-reflective, actually, because it's, like, pathological for me now at this point, and I mean, this with so many things that so many things that I do that are good, I do them in a way that's bad for me. I guess it's like eating too much fiber or something like that, you know, you're just like, this is a good thing, so I'll just do it as much as I can, which ends up taking me to that solipsistic place that I was talking about with you earlier, which is just that... I'm like, am I just standing in a room screaming into a mirror? is that all I'm doing?
Yeah, that's sort of like the extreme response.
That is the downside to that amount of introspection. But on the other hand, no one has ever told me something about myself I was surprised to hear. Unless it was completely untrue. I'm like, when somebody tells me something about myself, then I'm like, that's not accurate, honestly, then I feel very confident about that. Like, maybe I said something that came off wrong, but if someone tells me I am something, I'm like, no, I'm not. I feel pretty assured in that. Yeah.
Whereas I'm always surprised, like, people will tell me, oh, you know, you're like this, or you've got this leadership style, or you're, you know, this is, here's a weakness that I've seen in you. And oftentimes I'm like, huh? And then, oh, yeah, You saw it in
here's
me before
a weakness
I see it myself.
I've seen in you. Who said this to you?
My boss. Don't get me started.
Don't even get me started. You know where they work. I'll come and hang them up by their ankles.
That's an indelicate term.
Yeah, and he didn't mean it like that, but it's basically like, this is where you need to grow. Mm-hmm. This is like not necessarily a weakness, but this is why you're not getting to the next level. Mm. Here's something you need to work on in yourself.
Oh, you haven't drank anyone else's blood yet. Get on right. that. Drink some blood, for God's sake.
Go take the MBA program.
Nope. Lord, no, don't do that, please. I value you too much as a person to lose you that way.
The only reason I would take it would be to take it down from within.
That just seems like a lot of extra work.
A lot of extra work. It's not worth it.
Yeah, I can't imagine that many MBAs have actually been useful items for people. Like, that's not fair. Like, a lot of people do that later in life, and then they, get into consulting, and they love it, and it's really great. But, yeah, I'm in a place at the moment where I just, like, is that job necessary? Is this thing necessary? Like, why are we creating needs for things that don't actually exist? Like, any of the blank industrial complex things. Like, yeah. Like, dieting and or startups. Juicera, for Christ's sakes. They made a thing that crushed a bag. And then they found out that you could just crush the bag with your hands. Yeah. And so they wasted,
like $300
million.
Or something.
Oh, my God.
Just millions of dollars wasted for these things. Yeah.
On
just
venture
like,
capital that they just have money to spend on whatever idea.
So I loathe the ambition of others. Sometimes I'm just like, stop being
so damn ambitious.
We just need to
ruining the world.
Take care of each other more instead. But you can't monetize that, it turns out.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I bet you could, but
you have to like create needs and then fill these fake needs.
Yeah. That's bullshit. Well, I mean, that's what
it's bullshit
advertising is basically, right? Well,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's why it's terrible. Mm-hmm. Don't even know how I got over there. I was just thinking about MBAs and the things that you can do with them. And they're usually not great. That's all.
Some of these like fucking stupid startups are so interesting to me where it's just like, yeah, why did we need that? There was a funny tweet though where it was just like this guy was like, oh, I saved all this something, blah, 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 going to the store, and I got these tampons for whatever, but it's like he had a box of pads in his hand. It wasn't actually tampons.
It was a kid who's like, I was able to steal this box of tampons from the Amazon store.
Right.
Like, the brick-and-mortar store, and it's like, those are pads.
Yeah, the tweet was like, nothing says I'm in tech, like, not knowing the difference between pads and tampons.
Oh, my God.
Brilliant.
Yeah, yeah, I'm concerned about putting people by requirement for jobs through identical paces, like an MBA program would have in general. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm sure that there are some that are very good, and there are some that are just, like, my career counseling class was that I took, which was basically like doing the MBTI, and the, we did, aptitude tests.
Oh yes.
And we did group projects.
Oh, barf.
And stuff like that. So I bet that this is a lot like going to business school.
Mm-hmm. We were talking a little bit last night about like, degree programs and like getting people hands-on experience to skill them up for work and blah blah blah. Yeah. And then our other friend was saying like, but what about these humanities classes and what about these amazing arts-based things that like really teach you how to think independently and creatively and
I think there's a lot of
critical thinking,
a lot of data that supports that people who truly are successful in a technical field did do a lot of humanities in as an undergraduate, either minoring or even majoring in it, because they do teach you a different way of thinking and you don't get stuck in a rut where you're basically, you know how to do one thing really, really well, but you can't break out of that because that's all you've been trained to do. So I think she's right. There needs to be a balance. So yes, put energy into skills building and trades and so forth, but you have to balance that out because people are just going to be stuck and they're not going to be fulfilled.
But like the way that systems are set up right now is that you stream people into either one or the other. Yeah. And I wish that there was a synthesis between the two. It would be so good.
More integrated.
Like, yes, I'm doing carpentry, but I'm also like studying this literature thing and like somehow it just like, it would work together in a way so that people have like, cause then on the job site, then you need emotional intelligence to work with your team.
Of
like,
course.
You need to be able to, solve a problem creatively that it's like the boss doesn't even know like how to like, oh, now we're stuck on this problem. And then someone can be like, oh, I had this interesting creative solution or like it might help you with like managing staffing issues because, everyone's in a rut of like everyone needs to be 9 to 5, but no one can work, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, well, if we were creative, we could change the schedule around and da, da, da.
Sure.
Like there's all kinds of uses for creative problem solving that no one would necessarily think about.
Yeah. So I think these programs, if you are doing a pure science program, I like that, at least where I work, that there is requirements to do arts and breadth. Yeah, the breadth requirements. That wasn't around when I was doing my degree.
Came in 2006.
When I was How do you know that?
I've reviewed the Senate documents.
Of course she has.
Reviewed the Senate documents.
Oh, God. Dude, I approve the calendar every year for our department. So, wow. Yeah.
But, like, I remember when I was doing, like, my undergrad in arts, you had to do a science credit.
Yeah,
but I don't
it was
know.
The opposite.
Yeah, I don't know if they
Yeah, no, there is.
The
you have to do two Q classes, which are quantitative based. Oh. So something that has a mathematical base of some kind. So they take formal logic from, this is like me getting to do my job on air, which is not something I get to do terribly often. So there is the Q classes. They have, you can do formal logic, you can do a math, you can do, I did an upper division Q in gender studies that was about risk assessment.
Mm. Oh, that's cool.
And risk in gendered sporting and, like, adventure activities and stuff. So it was, like, a very interesting thing about, like, physical gendered bodies and the risks inherent in, like, letting women go into men's sports.
But their uterus might fall out.
And, like, what happens when trans athletes are trying to, like, break into a gendered sport, that kind of stuff. So that was a Q class, but it was fascinating, and I learned a lot about risk as a concept and how that's applied academically, and I wouldn't have learned that. And I took math for teachers, and it taught me about bases, which is something that I'd never known before, was that, like, we count in tens because we have 10 fucking fingers. And, like, there is a different way to look at numbers. Like, you could do base 4, which is you only have the digits 0, 1, 2, and 3. And you can still count two numbers that exist using this base, but they'll have different numerical... And it made sense in the class.
Cool.
So it opened up my brain in a way that I wouldn't have expected. And I think, like, going back to school has made me more of a... the J in the INFJ is, like, the judging, the sort of, like, snap. Like, I don't judge people, like, their experiences in life, but I'll judge, like, the behavior or something, like, because I have to be like, oh, is this person on a bus just needing to rant, or are they going to come and spit in my face right now?
Because
then I can make that judgment.
That's about safety, and I think a lot of women are hypervigilant about that, obviously.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Or just anything, right? Yeah. Like, it's just like, what is the right kind of vibe for me to be projecting in this room right now? Like, am I coming across as too bored or whatever, you know? So I think those are things that
You were on your phone, sorry.
What is the last? It's either a J or a P?
Perceiving.
Because I perceive the world around me, but I don't perceive it without applying judgment to it, right? Like, I have to process what I'm perceiving. So, but I think I look at Tessa, and I think she has trouble with the processing. So she's just picking it up and sometimes can't interpret it.
Right.
So those are things I notice in the difference. Although she came up with an INFJ as well. I think she's more like an INFP probably. So
what one's that? What archetype is that?
INFP?
Yeah. I can't believe you didn't write all these things down next
God
to the thing already on your notes.
Why didn't I? I didn't realize we're gonna get so deep into this. I thought you guys would be like, that's
we
fine.
We have an hour.
Mediator. Oh, this one. I just love this picture. If you're online right now, you can look at the mediator.
It's just a lady skipping through the flowers.
Oh my God, that's totally her!
It really is.
I need to read that.
Poetic, kind, and altruistic people, always eager to help a good cause.
Yep. Poetic for sure.
Altruistic for sure.
Extremely altruistic. Yeah, I've 16 personalities is definitely the best site for this. There's a bunch of different sites that you can do this on, but this is certainly the best put together site.
Yeah, I like the design. I like the fact that they've got, you know, character types for each one. You can kind of identify, like, ooh, I don't like that kind of person, or oh, that's totally me.
The protagonist though is like the king with a sword, which is interesting.
Yeah, it is an interesting. Well, I like to think of it as like the protagonist in fiction. Like, you know, you're reading a novel and who's the center of this story. It's me.
Yeah, that's
guys,
kind of how
it's
I feel.
Me. I am the center of my story. I mean, it could be because I'm an only child, and so I've always had to think that way. But
The ones that I, the stuff from here that I really enjoy, Aaron didn't say the one that I thought was really important.
Oh.
Which was just some of the pull quotes from this are really good. Like, INFJs tend to see helping others as their purpose in life, but while people with this personality type can be found engaging rescue efforts and doing charity work, the real passion is to get to the heart of the issue so that people need not be rescued at all.
Oh, nice. To make yourself obsolete.
Exactly, basically. Yeah. Like in terms of utility. Yeah, yeah. I want everybody to have what they need. I don't want to be getting off on helping people all the time and being, like, a helper monkey or whatever. Mm-hmm. I just want justice in the world.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I want social justice. And I'm willing to go to war for it.
She's such an SJW.
I'm an INFJ SJW.
It might be interesting for those of you out there who work in a particular environment in an industry, whether you're in, a social environment where you have to be, you're helping, if you're nurses or whatever, or if you're in, for
like
me,
a nurse or something.
Nurses. If you work like me, I work in tech in higher ed. So it's interesting to see, looking at this list, I'd assume that there's a certain archetype that is drawn towards a particular career path, mm-hmm. or a particular environment to work in.
The website puts in, they have a good work category, and it kind of tells you, what would be the best. So, R1, mm-hmm. they always say social work and stuff mm-hmm. like that. But then when I flip to the ESFJ or whatever, it really got into, one of the ones that I read was, I think it was the second one, if you're in any of these helping fields, you can't be in crisis response. You have to be, behind the scenes helping so that the crisis responders have the help that they need.
Oh, so you're one level
removed. One level removed, and that is so real for me right mm-hmm. now. I used to be very much, jump into the thick of it. Now I'm just ooh, self-protection. Yes. And it literally said, you will get burned out if you do emergency response. And I'm like, did it.
Yeah. Damn it, should have read this first.
Yeah.
Let's talk about our weaknesses.
Oh, no.
No. Here's your weaknesses, Erin.
I'm so ready.
This is me. This is INFJ. Sensitive? No fucking shit, bitch. When someone criticizes or challenges INFJ's principles or values, they are likely to receive an alarmingly strong response. We're highly vulnerable to criticism and conflict, and questioning our motives is the quickest way to get to our bad side. And this one I thought was wrong, and then I realized that it's not, which is extremely private. I don't keep the details of my life private, but I don't make my needs known.
Oh,
I'm very private about what I want and what I need, because I don't want to put it on other people to do that for me. So I think that we're private when it comes to our personal lives. Using this a completed image, not a work in progress, is important to show to the world. I'm trying to fight that. So it keeps us from having to open up and be vulnerable. Mm. We all have a way of doing that. It seems like we're perfectionistic is another one. Often drop or ignore healthy and productive situations and relationships, believing that there might be a better option down the road. Mm-hmm. I don't drop things so much as not get involved in the first place, because I'm afraid I'll drop things if I find something
better. So
you've
learned to adapt to that.
Always needing to have a cause and can burn out very easily.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Soup's true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's ours, the ENFJ is, overly idealistic, too selfless, too sensitive. So again, I was just I don't know, but at the same time, maybe. When they say too selfless, they say they can bury themselves in hopeful promises. If they aren't careful, they can spread themselves too thin, left unable to help anybody. Sure. That's definitely true.
Yeah, I think that's true of almost mm-hmm. anybody. Yeah. But, yeah, if that's what you're doing day in, day out.
Yeah, and then, fluctuating self-esteem, I was kind of I don't really feel that. But then when you kind of read, sometimes they ask for criticism out of insecurity and, wondering how I can improve, how can I improve? And I'm
sure.
I do that.
Yeah, I can see that for sure.
Yeah,
You do that?
But with the ISFJ, or ESFJ, is, worried about social status, inflexible, reluctant to improvise, and I'm just like, no, none of those really feel like me at all. So, again, I don't feel too needy. I don't really think so.
Weren't you worried about not having a blazer the other day, though?
I did, yeah, because I...
trying to blow up your spot. I just thought it would be funny if I said that.
I guess that is a worried about social status and perception, because I went into a fancy place that normally everyone's in suits and stuff like that, and I didn't know I had to go to that fancy place, and I was in very much an East Van Witch kind of get-up, because I thought that my work day was going to be way more casual.
You were wearing secret pajamas.
I absolutely was wearing secret. I wear secret pajamas even in the fancy situation, though.
Really?
Yeah, because...
Bold.
I can wear dresses,
mm-hmm.
but that are just fancier, but they're so comfortable. And a blazer is not uncomfortable to wear, so mm-hmm. it's fine, but I just, wanted to be more dressed up than I was when I'm, oh, I'm here with very important people, and uh-huh. I kind of look like a bit of a scrub right now. I'm wearing my Blundstones, big fuzzy socks, layers of chiffon.
So comfortable,
skirts.
Though.
Oh, so and, crystal jewelry and shit.
Wow.
You had the power. It's all good.
I enchanted them all with my witchy ways.
I think in this city, though, you really can get away with that. That's mm-hmm. almost like a conscious choice that some people make yeah. that you'll find, you know, in almost any situation.
It's true.
Yeah. So and good for you.
There is, like, the interesting uniforms that I've noticed around. Like, I can always pick out who the labor, like, union people are because they always wear jeans and, like, a button-up plaid shirt with a blazer.
Oh,
and, like, work shoes kind of thing. Yeah. And then you can tell, like, the social worker nurses wear Blundstones,
yes.
jeans, and, like, a fun t-shirt with a blazer. Like, it just... So I have all the different, like, yeah.
Anyway. You've got a different outfit for every union you've ever been part of, pretty much.
Yeah, yeah. And, like, and every role. I definitely am, like, yeah, malleable in that way. So, mm-hmm. like, yeah, the...
That's useful.
The not flexible and like, unable to improvise or, like, read the room or innovate or whatever. I was just like,
No, that doesn't fit.
So... But this one about, like, yeah, struggling to make tough decisions, apparently. Do you have issues with struggling to make tough decisions? Because that, I don't understand how we got the J on the J, but then it says that our weakness is, like, sometimes you can be stricken with, like, paralysis if you're caught between a rock and a hard place, because you can imagine all the consequences, especially if they're humanitarian. And that, to me, is, like, I thought the judgment was supposed to be about decisiveness. Yeah, so.
Interesting. I don't feel that for me. Mm-hmm. On this one, so I'm reading, are you reading ENFJ or INF? ENFJ. It's okay. Oh, yeah, I didn't even get to that page. So on here, I'm reading that they have a tremendous capacity for reflecting on and analyzing their own feelings. True.
Mm-hmm. Which also is supposed to be I, not
I
E.
Know, it doesn't make any sense. This is very
weird.
Wait.
Oh, no, this is bullshit. We've blown it up. We've blown up the spot.
But are you sure you're looking at the right one?
Yeah.
Okay.
But if they get too caught up in another person's plight, they can develop a sort of emotional hypochondria, seeing other people's problems in themselves, trying to fix something in themselves that isn't wrong. Yeah, I do that for sure. It's important for ENFJs to pull back and use that self-reflection to distinguish between what they really feel and what is a separate issue that needs to be looked at from another perspective.
Not my circus, not my monkeys.
Yeah,
totally. One thing I have in my interpersonal relationships for ENFJ is something that it's both, it's a little humble braggy, but it's also very true.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like INFJ's eloquence and persuasiveness can lead to a lot of unwanted attention and popularity.
Ah.
That's the popularity thing. It's mm-hmm. it's like, I'm popular. It's so sad. But it's like, you know, people wanting to talk to you or get your opinion on things is awesome. But when it's like
almost a full-time job sometimes in certain communities that you're involved in.
Yeah, yeah. So there are quiet and determined idealism and imaginative expression naturally draw influence, and if there's anything INFJs avoid, it's the accumulation of power over others and people who are drawn to that type of power, mm-hmm, which is mm-hmm. extremely true for mm-hmm, me. I do mm-hmm. not like authority over other people.
Yeah.
I love authority over myself and the things that I do. I'm mm-hmm. terrible at taking it, but yeah, I don't want to determine for other people what the best thing is. It's partly why I don't have kids, because I'm just like, I don't fucking know little people. Good luck. Good luck. Good fucking luck.
Mm-hmm. And I think because you're so introspective, but then you also model it in a really external way a lot of the time, and then people mm-hmm. see that, and then they want your, like, almost blessing for, like, well, I've been doing some good work, too. Like, am I good? Right. Am I good? Am
I
good?
I get that. I get the am I good kind of thing. You are. You absolutely are. But I talked about this on the podcast also. It's just, like how straight guys always want to tell me if they've had, like, gay experiences.
Oh.
Regardless of whether I've been dating them or for friends or something like that. Like, they always want to be like, well, you know what? I'm not 100% straight. Even if you think that I am, I'm actually cool and I've done adventurous things. And I'll be like, oh, that's cute.
Yeah.
That's nice, honey. Oh, did you touch your penis?
Oh, my God.
Ooh, that's cute.
I do like it when I find out that guys...
Yeah, no, I automatically like them better. If they're like, oh, yeah, I definitely think guys are hot. I might not want to, like, suck his dick, but, like...
Who's that character?
That is 70% of all straight men. His name is Ryan.
Hi, Ryan. We're sorry.
The Chad.
Ryan the Chad.
Ryan the Chad.
Ryan the Chad. Oh, my goodness.
Chad Anthony.
Oh, this has been fun. Have we learned something about ourselves?
That we love just, bullshit categorization so much.
It's just kind of reinforced, and then I'm just like, it's the same way that I'm with astrology, where I'm like, oh my God, that is so me. Ah, that's not really me.
Yeah.
You know, and even though they fall in the same category, it's just like, I take the things that I like and that reinforce what I feel about myself, and then I reject the rest.
There you go.
Because I don't want to have bad traits.
We got to pick and choose like it's the hot bar at Whole Foods, guys. It's just the most fun way.
Just as insufferable.
And oh, overpriced. Yes. And inaccessible.
So tell me about bird sex.
Oh my gosh, do we have time to get into that?
Oh yeah, just a little bit.
Well, I mean, I have to say that I am not an expert in the subject. I'm a hobbyist.
That could be the subtitle.
Bird sex.
That could be the subtitle of our podcast. I am not an expert in this.
Not at all. I recently read a book that was just absolutely fascinating. It's called The Evolution of Beauty, and it was written by an ornithologist. And I'm fascinated.
I fucking hope so.
You never know.
Bird science.
So I find birds very interesting. I think because I'm a musician, I've always been fascinated by bird song particularly, mm-hmm. and, you know, how birds use song as their form of communication. This book was, the thesis that he's putting forward is that he is a Darwinian, which is very controversial, I understand, but his idea is that birds have evolved various traits, and certain birds have beautiful plumage, the colors, the
just immediately thought of that as beautiful plumage.
And they have these incredible mating rituals that involve dances and acrobatics and things like mm-hmm. that. And his argument is that this evolved due to not for natural selection. Being a great dancer is not necessarily going to be the best for survival of a species.
If you can attract more mates by doing it.
But if you can attract more mates. And the idea here is that it's actually, a result of female mate preference that caused this. It wasn't that the males were evolving and changing, you know, to attract females. The females chose males based on their particular kink or their particular, like, whatever kind of turned them on. And then the idea I thought was fascinating was that female mate choice was really important because what it means is that that characteristic is going to be passed down to the offspring, so that if more females, say, prefer, you know, a blue plumage versus orange, that their offspring are also going to have a preference towards blue versus orange, and that'll keep their line going longer.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I learned that was really interesting is that most birds don't have a penis. Most male birds, they just kind of like,
that's,
they just
the
kind of come together. Like they just...
No,
like,
males have them too.
Oh, yeah.
Cloacas.
Oh,
yeah. Yes, I read about the cloaca.
Okay, so they just kind of...
They just have different gametes inside of them.
Oh, I see.
So they just kind of smush themselves together, and then the sperm just somehow ends up in the ladybird. But there is a small...
like that movie?
Yeah, directed by Greta Gerwig.
Ladybird. There's a small number of birds, though, that do have a penis. Year. And the ones that have a penis tend to be, there's a lot more sexual conflict and aggression in that particular type of bird.
Penis.
And now ducks are being the most interesting.
I was going to say.
Did you know about this?
Because I had ducks on my farm. And so.
And you saw the duck penis?
Yes. So the.
42 centimeters.
Yeah.
What the hell? That's like...
It's really long. It's all tucked up inside them in a weird corkscrew thing.
Yeah.
I believe I've talked about my, like, duck's corkscrew dick on this podcast before.
Okay,
all right.
Do you have a song about it?
Because we had, like, a male and a female duck and a bunch of female chickens, and the female duck died, and then the male duck went after all of our female chickens with, like, mega aggression.
You're kidding.
And he would, like, jump on them and ravage them in horrible ways.
Oh,
it was very bad.
It's
and
nasty.
And then I remember seeing the duck, like, chase the chicken with his little weird penis, like...
Just a dangling down.
As he was waddling away, and it was like,
just imagine him like shouting after her like Donald Duck, like can't see the
dangly duck penis behind
but
him.
But like, yeah, really aggressive.
Just dragging on the ground.
Yeah. Fucking chill, ducks. What, like?
I know, it's nasty.
So like, your name rhymes with fuck.
The interesting thing is that
that's
so
why they called them that, I guess.
No, I don't think it is.
So the question is now, why does the duck have a very, very long corkscrew shaped penis? Like, what does that do?
He's a sommelier on the weekends.
That's how he gets all the ladies.
Dick sommelier. It's like, oh yeah, this is a nice Chateau de Neuf de Pape. Hang on a second.
Oh, I wish this was a visual podcast.
Let the listener know that I mimed putting my dick into my duck penis into a bottle of wine and unscrewing it in a very aggressive way.
It's a thing of beauty.
Thank you.
An interesting thing that's happened is that females have evolved to counter the corkscrew. Ooh. So the direction that the corkscrew, I believe the male penis goes counterclockwise.
Except in Australia.
That's not true. That's a myth. It doesn't happen. But the female's vagina has evolved to counter it, to go resist it, so that, you know, a duck cannot get in there unless she wants him to.
So, like, when she wants him to, does it twist the other way or untwist
I'm
or something?
Sure. I think it just, she's more willing to allow it. But it's interesting that, like, that over time, like, that they have evolved. So if you look at different species, you'll see that some have just, like, slight corkscrew. And then the ducks, like the mallard ducks that we see, oh, my God, it's, like, completely insane, like, how much this evolution has caused them to change their sex parts to be, you know, very incompatible.
It's weird that a lot of, like, animal evolution around sex is to, like, avoid it. Or, like, to count, like, especially in the female, like, even in the human female reproductive system, there's, like, so many, like, traps that the sperm have to go through. So many hurdles to jump.
Traps.
And, like, the acidity is totally wrong. The, like, the mucus levels have to be just perfect or else they get stuck. There's all these, like, booby traps in there. Heh, booby. But same with, like, a lot of other, like, animals that have weird mating things where it's just like, I thought you wanted to, like, evolution should be to carry on the species, but so much of the evolution is to prevent it, but only the right ones, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
And the whole idea is that it's about the female mate selection, like, to empower females to decide,
yeah,
you know, that this is the dude I want, and this is where, you know, this is the kind of babies I want to raise. And, you know, with the idea that over time, if that female is successful, that the species will become less aggressive towards females, more likely to stick around and help raise young, and, you know, they can evolve that way. And if you look at...
So we're training dudes to not be assholes and to be, like, equal partners and...
Have you guys heard about the baboon population in, I want to say, Zimbabwe? Maybe it was Swaziland. I guess not an anthropologist, I suppose, a biologist who was observing the behaviors of this baboon troop that was eating a lot of...
I think I know
the
cockroach.
I think it's called the cockroach troop or something like that. And it's this guy, the scientist, I could just describe him to you as this beautiful, like, super wiry curly hair, and he's just sort of like a weird gray-haired uncle dude. And he's talking about this whole thing. It's like, well, the monkeys they ate, they always, like, scavenged from a dumpster from a hotel, basically, and then they ate tainted food, but because it's all the aggressive men males who got all the food first, they got, like, this tainted food and they all got sick and died.
Oh, wow.
And so it became, like, basically a more matriarchal culture in this troop, and they they would let, like, beta male baboons into the troop, and and eventually they've now, this one family, basically this one sort of community of baboons, is making less aggressive males, basically, because that they've self-selected for it.
Yeah, and when a new male would come in, they would, like, the other males would teach the new male to, like, not be aggressive and stuff like that. Like, am I remembering that correctly?
Yeah.
Okay. So I think that's really interesting. It's all kind of... Natural selection is all trying to, like, go towards less aggression, which is, like, let's have our human species evolve that way, too.
Yeah.
Like,
And in this book, the final chapters are, and how can we apply this to human nature and how we've evolved? And so he's comparing our closest primate relatives and showing, like, there's a real contrast, like the chimpanzees versus the bonobos. I love them bonobos so much.
It was Kenya. I was wrong about the African country that it's from.
Yeah, it's great to think about. I mean, I think humanity has a long way to go for sure, that we still see lots of acts of aggression, but it is hopeful to show that, you know, that the ladies can make a difference.
Yeah, so there's some, like, that socialization where it's like, you know, if this dude is an asshole, don't have sex with him. Like, that was, like, a whole, like, you know, feminist sexual revolution type thing where it's like, yeah, don't put up with bad behavior or withhold sex from, like, the bad person or whatever. It's like, and sometimes that's hard because, you know, you still are we still are all unfortunately attracted to men.
Oh, brother.
So then sometimes it's hard to be like, oh, I'm just not going to have sex with any man that exhibits this behavior. Just like, but, I don't know. That's...
Well, they're just called Forest Troop. I found the name of the BEB. This is Forest Troop.
Nice. I don't know. I'm overreaching with that statement, obviously, but it's like, you know, we can try to sell, like, you know, be a partner with, like, a good partner, and then hopefully you will raise children together that will also have chiller qualities and not perpetuate
cycles. We need to Lizestrata the assholes. Totally. Yeah. Collectively. We need to collectively
right
organize.
Right here, tonight.
Lizestrata them.
Let's all...
Please explain Lizestrata for the listeners who don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, no, we all know Lizestrata.
Yeah, of course.
I've seen it only in references. I've never actually read the original play or story or whatever it is, but basically it is women in a village or community want a war to stop, but the men keep doing war. And they're like, you know what? We're not going to fuck you anymore if you keep doing wars. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, no, my wiener. I'm pretty sure that this is the exact plot of
what says. A beautiful libretto.
This is, you know, it's emerged in, like, there's, like, an African culture version of the story. There's people who've actually just done it as a community to get things done. Wow. I love women. Women are incredible.
I just, like, I wish that we could organize better, like, obviously intersectionality is a huge thing, and lots of women have different experiences, so you can't just say, stone cold, let's all just do the same thing, because that won't work for everybody, especially in our global society. And there are lots of women who are fucking assholes that will continue to, keep being bad and want to do war stuff, too.
Stop doing war stuff!
Yeah, so, like, we can't just globally do that, but, like, I don't know. In smaller communities, I feel like we've all got good friends and good dudes in our life that, like, make a good community together, so that's good.
I'll keep it going.
Kick somebody out that's bad.
I'm a little bit more on tenterhooks around men these days. I'm just kind of like, we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah.
I dare you to disappoint me. Yeah, because then I'll just be disappointed in you and you'll feel horrible. You'll feel so bad.
Because all that social capital you got, you'll just spend it elsewhere.
I'm making it rain on different hoes.
Oh, man. Well, should we...
Don't come for me.
Should we put a pin in this beautiful bird sex story with all of its hopefulness and go downstairs and have a bullet journal party because we're nerds?
I'm going to post a bunch of, like, funny bird sex videos with this one, including the one where the kakapo fucks the dude's head.
Oh, yes, that one's really, really good.
Shiraka the kakapo. And a video I saw of a person who made a Bird of Paradise costume and then did the dance from Planet Earth, which is incredible, so I'll put that out.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
All right.
All right, we'll see you guys next week.
Bird dick. Woo-hoo.